I want to say hi to everybody in this room, hi to everybody at all of our campuses, people joining us online. We're in the series that I love, One Word Life Changers, and every week we're just looking at one single word that if you incorporate it, can actually change your life and make space for God. We've been doing this for several weeks, so a little pop quiz to see if you're all going on this journey. Does anybody remember what was the word that we looked at during the first week? No one remembers. God, what a sad thing. No, actually, that was the word no, and then we looked at yes, and then we looked at sorry, and we want to incorporate it into our lives. So if you haven't done this yet, I think we've had over 1,000 folks do this. Just text seven words to this number, 68398, and we'll actually send you back text and help remind all of us every day, how do I make this word a part of my life so that I can have space for God? Real simple. And this week, it's a tremendous word. It can bring enormous freedom and meaning, but it's the most countercultural word of this whole series. And I'll get into it like this. You can think about two different ways of doing your life. And you can express this physically with your body. If you were to take a hand and just squeeze it into a fist, like there was something in there that you really wanted to hold on to. And so you're clenching it. You're squeezing it. You do not want to let it go. You can go through life that way with your stuff. Hold it on. You can live this kind of a life. Or take the other hand and just do this. And there's an open hand before God. Just, God, whatever comes into my life, I'll hold it loosely. I'll share it easily. I'll trust you fully. You can go through life like this, or you can go through life like this. And the word that's behind this kind of life is the word enough. To say, God, I'll trust that you'll give me enough, that you are the God of enough, that you are God of abundance. And so I don't have to be a taker. So many people go through life and they're just takers. And you can smell it. And then I got a taker inside me. You have a taker inside you. I don't want to be a taker. I want to be a giver. I want to live life with the empty hand. And that actually starts by just saying, enough. I've got enough. I've had enough. I don't need more. And in fact, the inability to say enough, which is rampant where we live, is actually fatal. This is true for many species. Take a goldfish in a bowl, and if you were to think, you know, must be dull being a goldfish, can't be, you know, much to do besides swim all day. So you take all the food in the container of that goldfish's food jar and pour it all into the bowl. What will happen to that fish? It will die because a goldfish is not smart enough to be able to say enough. I have had enough. I had a turtle when I was a real little kid. I thought, it's got to be kind of a dull. If you're a turtle, there's not much to do. So at least you can eat. And I emptied all of the turtle food into that little plastic bowl. And my turtle did not live, because if you're a turtle, you don't know about saying enough. When our daughter was little, she really wanted a pet bird. So we got her a pet bird, and we taught her about, you know, you only feed a bird a certain amount. But we went on vacation, and apparently our neighbor's daughter did not know about this, because when we came back, she had been watching Jojo, was the name of the bird. And when we got back, Jojo was dead. The family didn't even want to tell us. They actually got another bird that looked like Jojo and gave it to us. And Nancy said, I don't think this is Jojo. And I said to Nancy, seriously, you think that our neighbors killed Jojo and bought a fake Jojo to try to fool us? Turns out that's exactly what happened. And so we got the real dead Jojo back, and our daughter was so sad that she insisted that we bury Jojo in our backyard. But this was Chicago in December. The ground was frozen. It wouldn't thaw out for another 8 months. So in the meantime, we had to keep the dead Jojo in our freezer. And every time you'd open the freezer to get ice cream, there's Jojo in there just looking at you, you know. Learn how to say enough. If you don't say enough, it'll kill you. And actually, it gets people, too. This is true. Even at the level of food, there's a Stanford researcher, done quite famous research. They asked people in France, Parisians, when do you know that you've had enough? Very interesting. And in Paris, the most common answer is, when I feel full, then I stop. I just say enough. They asked people in America, I think it was in Chicago, and the answer was completely different. People said, either it's when the food is all gone, when my plate is clean, or when the television show that I'm watching while I'm eating is done, then I figure I've had enough. They did these experiments. They became famous in social science circles where they would give people bowls of soup, but half of the subjects got what are called bottomless bowls of soup. And they have soup, but the bottomless bowls are actually secretly filled from underneath the tablecloth. And they find that people whose bowls keep getting filled end up eating about twice as much food as people whose bowls are not miraculously filled. Not because they're hungry, not because they need it. They just, we don't know when to say enough. And this is true when it comes to stuff and possessions and money. And we all want to think of ourselves as generous people. Nobody, there's nobody here that wants to, sets out to go through life like this. But I want to invite you to have the courage to take a look at yourself, because I got to tell you, as a nation, we don't live like this. The kind of state-of-the-art study on generosity in our day, most recently, is a book called American Generosity. And it finds that 84% of Americans give away 0 to 1% of their income. There's huge millions of people who have more than enough for, in this land where God has given us so much, we just give nothing. Only 3% of Americans give at the level of tithe. If you know much about the Bible, you know that God established this practice with Israel a long time ago. And it's called tithing. Tithe means that you give 10% of whatever God brings into your life as an expression of trust. God, you'll give me enough. Give me this day my daily bread, the God who sends manna each day. God, is an expression of trust and generosity. Whatever comes into my life, automatically I will give 10% immediately back to you. 97% of people who live in this land of so much abundance, of way more than enough, do not give at that level. And if you're not doing that, I hope you think about that today as a result of this talk. Am I going to live like this, or am I going to live like this? Now, there's a reason why we end up living like this, because we don't set out to. And I was thinking this week, you could kind of picture it in this way. For all of us, there's whatever amount of money I have, my current level of income and possessions and so. And then another amount is the amount that I want, the amount that I think would be enough. And the amount in between what I have and what I think would be enough is the discontentment zone. Because I think, man, I don't have enough right now, but if I had that much as that other person, then I would be content. And we'll spend our whole lives at this. Work harder, work longer, run faster, acquire more, raise the level of what you have. And so eventually we'll work real hard to do that. And now I have more, but I'm not content because now I think enough would be even more. Turns out that what I thought was enough isn't enough. And enough ends up being this very elusive amount. And now I have a new discontentment zone. And people go through our whole life long and think, man, if I just had more stuff, more money, bigger house, newer car, not there yet, but I'll get there someday. We think, if I just could afford stuff that cost more money, if my moments had a bigger price tag attached to them, and it's so insane, and we should know this from real early on. When our kids were very small, we took them one time to Disneyland. Anybody here ever take a bunch of real small kids to Disneyland? And we went in August when it was terribly hot. It was like 98 degrees in the shade. Disney characters in costume were dropping of heat stroke. We got there real early in the morning. By about 1:30 in the afternoon, the kids were just miserable. And I said to one of our kids, because they were just quietly weeping, saying, I want to go home. And I said, we can't go home. You haven't seen Snow White. I'm trying to pump them up. You haven't seen Snow White yet. I don't care about Snow White. I just want to go home. We can't go home. We haven't gone on the Pirates of the Caribbean yet. I don't care about the Pirates. I just want to go home. We can't go home because I paid $75. For you to come to the happiest place on earth. And I expect $75 worth of happiness. So you give it to me right now or I'll give you something to be happy about. And we go through life thinking, you know, that happiness can be purchased. And if I just had enough money, then I would have enough happy. And selfish people are the most miserable people and generous people are the most joyful people. And so, gang, what if you were to declare enough? This is where this gets real countercultural. We live in a part of the world that's going to tell you. If you ever declare enough, if you're not getting more and bigger and better. That's somebody after the last service that was just telling me that they made a decision to shift financially so that they could be more generous. And it's kind of like they opted out of a club where people would say, hey, you okay? Like, you're not acquiring everything you could? All the house, all the car, all the school, all the, you okay? To say, I got enough, and now I want to move into the generosity way of life. I want to live like this. It's real countercultural, but it's the only road to joy. So we're going to learn today about the man who discovered the word enough. And this is not really about him. This is God's call for me and for you. What if you were to say enough? I got enough. God, I'm trusting you. And I want to become a generous person. What if our church was to be the church of the open hand? Here's the guy. Here's the story. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. Now, from just these few words, we already know a fair amount about Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus understood money. He got money. He was good at money. He was highly motivated by money. We know this because Israel was occupied by Rome, and Rome had learned when they would occupy a country, don't exile the people, leave most of them there, but just tax them, and then Rome could get lots of money. But that meant that they would need from that people a few folks that would serve as tax collectors, because those would be the guys that know where the wealth is. So tax collector would be somebody in Israel that could say, you know, this guy's got 50 sheep and 50 head of cattle and 100 acres, and you get a lot of money out of him. So people in Israel didn't like tax collectors because they colluded with the oppressive Romans. And if I'm a rich Israelite, I'll go to a guy like Zacchaeus and say, man, don't tell the Rome about all my money. And then Zacchaeus, tax collector, typically would say, well, okay, but if you want me to be quiet, you're going to have to pay me off because I got to give them something. And then often the tax collector would go ahead and tell the Romans anyhow. So nobody liked the tax collectors. That's Zacchaeus' game. He has already given up on relationships, community. Nobody likes him. He's okay with that because he's rich. He's really good at it. But over time, there's something kind of empty in him. There's something kind of hungry in him. Something's kind of gnawing in him. And so he's interested in this man, Jesus, this rabbi, this spiritual teacher. You would never expect a tax collector, let alone a chief wealthy tax collector, to be interested in a spiritual teacher, but he is. Strangest thing. Zacchaeus wanted to see who Jesus was. But because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead, climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. You'll notice in this story, there's a lot of interesting little details. It's not just the tree, sycamore fig tree. Almost certainly, scholars say, Luke, this is the only gospel that this story is told in. Luke got this directly from Zacchaeus. And he tells all these details in this story that tell us how unusual it is. In the ancient Middle Eastern world, rich, powerful guys never ran. That wasn't dignified. They all wore robes. You can't run good in a robe. Zacchaeus runs. Something that really wants to see Jesus. Wants to get ahead of the crowd. In the ancient Middle Eastern world, rich, powerful guy never climbed trees in public where other people could see him. They'd be mocked for doing that. Even in our day, rich, powerful people don't do that very much. Zacchaeus does that because he really wants to see Jesus. Maybe he wants to hide from the crowd. Maybe also we're told in this story that he's short. Scotty Scruggs mentioned a couple weeks ago, there's an old song we used to sing when I was a kid growing up in Sunday school. Zacchaeus was a wee little man. Anybody ever hear that song? And nobody likes to be a wee little man. When my wife was dating a guy before me, she dated one guy who was a really big guy. He was actually a little over 7 feet tall. And he was a tremendous athlete. And no kidding, he signed a professional sports contract for gazillions of dollars. And it made me feel like a wee little man, knowing my wife went from that to me. And I did not like that feeling. And nobody likes that feeling. And maybe that's part of why Zacchaeus was so drawn to money, because money kind of makes you feel big. Money makes you feel like somebody. Money will make people look at you like you must be somebody. You must be a big man. But it's kind of wearing off for Zacchaeus, like it always does. And then the most amazing thing happens. He's up in a tree. He didn't want anybody to see him. He's a tax collector. Nobody likes him. So he thinks he's hidden, but he's going to be able to see Jesus. And then Jesus does what nobody expects. When Jesus reached the spot, the tree, he looked up into the tree and said, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. Now, Zacchaeus was not really counting on that. And everybody, hey, look at that guy up in the tree. Zacchaeus, come on down. I must stay at your house today. Really, Jesus? Of all the houses in Jericho, all of the religious people, all of the other rabbis that are there, all of the other devout people, really you're going to go stay at this guy in the protection racket? You're going to go stay at the home of this horribly corrupt bureaucrat? Really? See, the thing about Jesus is this wonderful news. Whatever your financial story, maybe you're a train wreck, maybe you've been through bankruptcy, maybe you feel like a failure, maybe you have been dishonest, maybe you have been greedy, maybe you have cheated, maybe you have embezzled, maybe you have been in prison. None of that is a barrier to Jesus coming to your house today. He loves bringing grace to anybody that will open themselves up. And the strangest thing happens. Zacchaeus, you know, who at first must have been saying, you know, psst, Jesus, go away. Zacchaeus comes on down and says, no kidding, Jesus, my house? Come on, let's go. This is just astounding. No one saw this coming. In fact, the story goes on. All the people saw this and began to mutter, he has gone to be the guest of a sinner. We know how much they hate this. Occasionally, actually quite often in the Bible, Jesus does stuff that will tick one group off or another. And so people mutter, and sometimes the Pharisees mutter, sometimes the Sadducees mutter. This is the only time in all the New Testament that we're told all the people mutter at what Jesus did, because nobody likes a tax collector. You know, this group or that group doesn't, but nobody likes a tax. Jesus is going to the home of Zacchaeus? Serious? And he does. And wouldn't you love to know what the conversation was like there? We don't get to know until the very end. But whatever it was, it triggers these thoughts that Zacchaeus has never had before. And he starts to think about his financial life. He looks at the house that he's lived in that he's real proud of, but it starts to look kind of different to him. Like maybe it's kind of a prison. And I wonder if Jesus was saying stuff to him like, you know, Zacchaeus, your whole life long, you've been a money guy. You get money and you love money. But is it getting you where you hoped it would? You know, Zacchaeus, there was a time when you had to walk everywhere because you had nothing, and then you became a tax collector and you got really good at it, and one day you could buy a donkey, and that was pretty cool. And then the thrill kind of wore off, and then you thought, hey, I could get rid of my donkey and upgrade to a camel. Camel in the ancient world is kind of like a Hummer in our day, kind of like an all-terrain vehicle. That'd be cool. And then the thrill kind of wore off on that. And so you got a camel with two humps. Those are quite rare in the Middle East. And that's like having a luxury camel with a little safety seat for the kids in the middle of the two humps. And you thought, wow, this is cool. And then eventually that new camel smell wears off. And the thrill's kind of gone from that. And now you got a whole fleet of camels. And how many camels are going to take, Zacchaeus? You used to have to wear kind of shabby clothes. And then you started getting some money and you bought a silk robe. That was cool. Then you got another one. Then you got a whole closet full of them. And then you had your colors done and you found out that you were a winter and all of your robes were earth tone, and that's not good. So you got rid of all those old robes and you got all brand new, beautiful silk robes. And you got so many closets full of them, you can't even wear them all. How many more robes you need, Zacchaeus? You used to have to live in a tent, then you got in a house, then you bought riverfront property on the Jordan, and now you got the biggest, nicest house in town, and that's not doing it for you. How big's the house got to be? In other words, you can be satisfied with your money, but you can never be satisfied in your money, only in God. You know, Zacchaeus, you could find the joy and contentment. You could surrender everything to me. You could follow me. You could be a generous guy. You could use whatever resources God has given you to feed the hungry, people that bless you instead of cursing you. These thoughts start going through Zacchaeus' head. It's amazing how he's never thought about them before. And now it's like his heart's pounding. And then this very dramatic moment comes in the story. But Zacchaeus stood up. Now, in the ancient world, at a dinner, hospitality, civility is a big thing. Often hosts at a kind of formal banquet at some point will stand and recognize all the people who are there and give honor to the primary guest. So it's not real surprising. But Zacchaeus, when he stands up, he doesn't address the people. He doesn't do the after dinner speech. He's just looking at Jesus. It's like for Zacchaeus in that moment, it's only him and Jesus, and his heart's going to pound out of his chest, and he's got to say this now. He can't wait another moment. Zacchaeus stands up and says, "Look, Lord, here and now, I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I've cheated anybody out of everything," and of course he's cheated everybody out of everything, "I will pay back four times the amount." And everybody is staggered. Everybody is stunned. And Mrs. Zacchaeus is thinking, "Hey, shouldn't we have talked about this before you stood up and said this?" And kids are wondering, does this mean I'm not going to get my own camel anymore? But Zacchaeus is so captivated by the possibility of a new way of life with Jesus and a new means to do something with this stuff, that here's what he does. He recalculates everything in light of the kingdom of God. And he says, actually, here's what I have, but enough is less than what I have. So here's what I'm going to do. Like, the difference between what would be enough for me and what I have, that could become the generosity zone instead of the discontentment zone. And here and now, I'm putting a stake in the ground. The man stood up. Like, he's gone public with this. I'm giving away 50%. I believe that 50% of what I have with God is more than 100% without God. That's a pretty staggering thought. And then I'll make things right. I'll pay people back that I've cheated. And then Jesus stands up. And he doesn't do the after-dinner speech and talk about what a nice meal it was. He just looks right at little Zacchaeus. Tears just flooding down his face. You got to understand what's going on here. Jesus said to Zacchaeus, "Today salvation has come to this house because this man, this wee little man, this tax collector, is a son of Abraham." Now, this language is not accidental, and there's a reason why Zacchaeus would remember it till the day he died. If you were an Israelite, about the greatest phrase that could be used to describe you would be a son of Abraham or a daughter of Sarah. Abraham and Sarah, that's where Israel started. Zacchaeus is a corrupt tax collector that colludes with Rome. Nobody has called him a son of Abraham for a long, long time. They've called him a son of something else, but not a son of Abraham. And he can't believe that Jesus calls him that. What a gracious, what an amazing person Jesus must have been. What an amazing thing it must be to sit down at a table with Jesus. And then he says, "Salvation's come to this house." And gang, what he means is not, you know, Zacchaeus has bought his way into heaven. You can't buy your way in. You can't earn your way in. It comes as a gift of grace. Jesus stopped by that tree way before Zacchaeus had done anything to merit anything. But that word salvation is often translated healing or deliverance. And it means something more than just if you believe the right thing, you get to go into the pleasure factory when you die. It means now for Zacchaeus that disease that has been corroding his soul of more is being healed. And that treadmill that he's been on forever, he's getting delivered from. And there's real smart people all around us, and there's a culture that reinforces this that will just say, life is all about more. Your identity is all about more. Your happiness is all, do you have more? Do you have bigger? So ironic. I was thinking about this, getting ready for this message. Because my wife and I have been married for a lot of years now. We've lived in different places. I was thinking about our life in each one of those places. When we first got married, we lived in a single bedroom. I don't know, it was 150 square feet or something. We had to share a bathroom with other folks down the hallway. And then from there, we moved into a little apartment, two bedrooms. We started our family there. Had a tiny little kitchen. It was so old, there was still a trap door in that kitchen from when the ice man used to come around and put a block of ice in the kitchen. And when refrigerators got invented, they actually had to add a tiny little room onto the kitchen to put that refrigerator. That's where our family started. And then from there, we got to move into the first house we ever owned. That's so exciting to have that little house. And then we moved into another house. And then we got to move into another house that was just amazing. biggest, nicest house we ever lived in. All the kids had their own bedrooms. And then a few years ago, we moved into a condo. And it has about half the space that that really nice house had. And I was looking around that one time and just thinking about the shift that that was for my wife and what it's like to have to go from that into this. And I said to Nancy, you know, now that we have moved into this condo, have you started to regret not being married to that rich, tall, athletic guy? And she said, no, I started regretting that a long time ago. That's, you know, condo has nothing to do with that way back then. Ask you a question, guys. All those different places we lived, where do you think we were the happiest? What do you think is the correlation between how many square feet we own and how many moments of joy we experience? And I'll tell you what you already know. There is no correlation at all. Some of our happiest moments were back in that one tiny little bedroom where we started out. Here's the thing about this word enough. Enough is not a level of wealth you achieve. It's a statement of trust you declare. Now, economists will talk about what is sometimes called the rational theory of choice. The idea is that people face their financial lives, if they're rational, by way of thinking, it's just straight math. As long as I have 100% and I keep 100%, I own 100%. If some of that goes away from me, then I am lessened, then I have lost something. And the Bible contests that view of financial reality. This is what God says. Now, you have to decide if you believe this or not. If you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry, if you satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then, notice, if you do that, then your light will rise in the darkness and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs. Not he will gratify your every desire, which are insatiable. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. And you have to decide, do I believe that or not? See, people who think that money is just about the math, the Bible says there's a new kind of math. Zacchaeus says, I believe in a new kind of math where 50% of what I have with God in it is more than 100% where God is not in it. Because generosity is what started the universe. There's a great book called Charity, and this is its thesis. Generosity is not just a good deed, but a declaration of belief about the world and the God who created it. I choose not to live a materialistic life because I believe that the world is not at its core materialistic, but it is rather spiritual. It was started in a burst of generosity on the part of God, and God operates on the basis of generosity, and God loves to give, and you cannot outgive God. And when you step into a life of generosity, you are stepping into the jet stream of the kingdom of heaven. And if you don't do that, you go through life just saying, it's all about more. It's more money and nicer possessions and more square feet. You're headed down a road for ruin and folly, and you don't even have to believe the Bible. All you have to do is look at the end of every human life, because every human being, no matter how big a house they may live in for a certain period of time, ends up in a little pine box, in a little accommodation unit. We all get the same number of feet. Anybody want to guess how many? 6 feet. If you're Nancy's old boyfriend, 7 feet. Big deal. Big 7 foot nice box. All end up with the same thing. So, men though, will you say enough like little Zacchaeus? There's a parable in AA circles that I kind of like. Guy who's drunk and miserable walking down the street, he meets God and he says, God, I can't stand it anymore. Would you give me sobriety? And God says, well, I'll do it, but you'll have to give me all your money. It's a costly gift. The guy says, okay, it's worth it. He's got $50 in his wallet. He says, here, God, take it all. God says, okay, here's the gift of sobriety. And the guy says, oh, that's great. Thank you. But now you took all my money. How am I going to put gas in my car? God says, oh, you have a car. You didn't tell me that. You have to give me your car. Guy says, all right, God, here's my car, but now how am I going to get to my job? God says, oh, you have a job. You didn't tell me that. You have to give me your job. Guy says, all right, but then how am I going to take care of my mortgage? And God says, mortgage, you have a house. You didn't tell me you got it. You have to give me your house. Guy says, well, how am I going to take care of my family? And God says, here's the deal. You give me all your money. You give me your car. You give me your job. You give me your house. And then I'll be with you and take care of you. And you can use my money. And you can drive my car. And you can work at my job. You can live in my house. Because the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. And then we just get to steward it for a little while. And one day it'll all go back to him. And when we steward it with generosity, it just works better than when we do this. So here's my dream for me and for you. And I know, I get that it's scary. I get it. But what if we were the church of the open hand? Being where we are here in the Bay Area, where there has been an explosion of wealth unprecedented in the history of the world, where there has been an explosion of affluence unprecedented in the history of the world, where there has been an explosion of discontentment and envy unprecedented in the world. What if we became a community of the open hand? Now, what if you did this? I know I get the fear part. I feel all of this, but I just want to put this to you as your pastor. Really with great joy for you. Are you tithing? Have you just made that commitment that the first 10% is going to God? And if you're not, Cal, you're missing out. Are you trusting God with what he's giving? Have you said to him, God, I want to live like this? I hope you have. I hope what happened to that little guy, Zacchaeus, I hope this is your weekend for that. I hope this is the day that you put a stake in the ground and declare, here and now, God, I'm going to be a generous person, and I will trust that less is more if you're in it. So, that's the word enough. It's a great word, and it's yours if you want it. Let's pray. Would you bow your head and close your eyes? And I want to invite you now to talk to God about this. If you want to, just open your palm up. You know, just take it from a clenched fist to an open palm before God. Whatever you need to tell him, God, I feel like I've messed up my financial life. God, I'm scared. Jesus is with you right now, just like he was with that little Zacchaeus. He's just waiting to hear from you. Look, Lord, it's all yours. It's all yours. I'm giving you my money, my car, my house. And I know you'll let me use it for a while. Help me steward it well. Help me to give. Jesus, lead us into the life of the open hand. We pray in your name. Amen.